Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Culture Scene. Our guest this evening is Alison Josephs, founder of Jew in the City, one of the most popular blogs in the Jewish blogosphere. Good evening, Alison.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. Now, some of you may ask, who is Alison Josephs? Alison has been involved in the field of Jewish outreach for over a dozen years, teaching, lecturing, working at Partners in Torah, Sinai Retreats, and NCSY. She's also the spiritual mentor to actress Maim Bialik and other such activities, but we're going to let her explain. Alison, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you gravitate to Kiruv?
Well, I was not raised observant myself. I was raised as a proud conservative Jew, and when I was about 8 years old, it occurred to me one day that I didn't know why I was alive, and I asked my parents, who had provided me with this very nice upper-middle-class American secular life, by the way, why are we here? And they sort of gave me a blank stare and had nothing to offer me, nor did anyone else in the world that I was living in. And it was this really terrifying discovery to make at such a young age that although I had really every happiness in life, that nothing was actually amounting to anything or going to last when this world was over. And it sort of bothered me that no one else was bothered by this like I was, and I sort of tried to stay distracted in my happy secular life, but the question just kept coming back, what is this all about? Why are we here? Nothing's going to last. Nothing can come with. And I kind of accidentally stumbled upon Orthodox Judaism at around 16. I met a teacher at an after-school Hebrew high school, and it changed my life when I started experiencing Shabbos and learning Torah in depth. And I realized that the majority of the Jewish people have no idea about the depths of their heritage. They think that being Jewish is, you know, food and jokes. And you know, my mother said it was about Nobel laureates and doctors and lawyers and artists. There was no idea that there's wisdom in Torah living and Torah learning. And really, as soon as I discovered the beauty myself, I wanted to share it with everyone. It really comes down to being so amazed and astonished with what I found that I didn't want to just keep it to myself. I want every Jew to have the opportunity to experience it like I have.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting your parents on Hanukkah at the event honoring you, and they appeared to be quite religious. So obviously you must have started with your parents, and having succeeded there, you probably continued.
So it was my two sisters and my parents are all observant today. Nobody came easily. It was more just give it a try, just see what it's like, just experience what I'm experiencing and learn what I'm learning. And I just wanted them to see it for themselves because, again, I felt like how could I keep this to myself? And eventually each one of them gave learning and Shabbos and the different things that I was doing a try. And so now the whole family is observant. And then I went on to college after that, and I started finding classmates at college who were Jewish and inviting them to Jewish classes and to Shabbases with me. And then straight out of college, I started working at Partners in Torah. And now with the internet, you know, with social media, sort of the it's limitless what you can accomplish, how far you can get a message
Absolutely.
Out there. Which is...
Now, when you went to Columbia, I understand that you got a bachelor's in philosophy.
Yeah.
Listening to you and listening to that question that you asked when you were a little 8-year-old girl, it is quite obvious that philosophy wasn't natural.
Right.
How has that served you in your life's journey?
How has that served me? I'm sorry, is what?
In your life's journey, in what you choose to do.
Oh, being a philosophical person?
Right.
Well, it's just sort of how my brain is wired, and no matter how distracted I get in the day-to-day stuff, I just sort of automatically get reset back to the most basic questions. So even once I felt like I found an answer and a purpose for existence, I was just discussing with a friend today over lunch, I can never get too caught up in the day-to-day. My mind is kind of constantly coming back to, am I accomplishing my mission here? Recognizing that time is running out. It's not like, you know, I'm in my old age now and I'm feeling like life is short. I've been feeling like life is short since I was a child. So it's a little bit of an intense existence, which is why I also like to think about things like makeup and shaitels and, you know, have some shallowness in my existence as well, because otherwise it would be really deep. But I hope that it's something that will keep me focused and, you know, helping to accomplish what I was put on this planet to do.
It's interesting what will appeal to a Jew who may have grown up religious and, because of some cataclysmic event in his or her life, left the fold, or a Jew who may never have been religious, may never have known much about religion, and yet somehow something happens and he discovers that there is an HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He discovers that there is a beautiful tradition and that he didn't have to go looking in alien religions or alien cultures, that we as Jews have it all. A couple of years ago, right after that big New Year's blizzard, on my blog at The Kosher Scene, I posted an article called Oifen Pripichik, In the Fireplace. There is an old Yiddish song where the first stanza goes, Oifen Pripichik brennt a fire, und ich stieb is heiß, und der Rebbe lernt plain the Kinderlach, the mother face. A fire is burning in the fireplace, and it's warm in the house, as the rabbi is teaching little children the Aleph Beis. My whole purpose for putting up this post was I just took what I thought were a couple of nice photographs of the snow, and I wanted to put them up. But my blog is mostly a foodie blog. So just as Shabbos comes and there are certain comfort foods, I wanted to show that no matter how cold it may be outside, the comfort foods of Shabbos will warm us up. And my total intention was really nothing more esoteric than just showing off a couple of pictures. And here is a rather lengthy comment that I got, and it will show the power of words. And then I want to hear from a similar example from you, how you were able to turn somebody around. Let me quote. I write this with tears, tears mixed with guilt, gratitude, and happiness. Let me explain. I grew up in a Hasidic household, steeped in learning. I'm a direct descendant of Rashi, and filled with tradition. Shabbos was always a feast for heart, body, mind, and soul. My intended was killed during World War II, and with her, my dreams. As was everyone in my family, including my parents, grandparents, siblings, their spouses, my nieces, my nephews. Only I was inexplicably left, perhaps just to painfully carry the memories. I came to New York in 1950 at 21, young, broken, and with no dreams. I buried myself in work, and by the 60s I built a sizable fortune, but my heart was filled with anger. Anger because so many innocents close to me and my people had been killed for no apparent reason, other than to satisfy a murderous caprice. How could a merciful God have allowed it? So I Americanized my name, intent on cutting every memory of Judaism from my heart and from my mind. I decided I would never step into a synagogue or a place of learning. I'd never willingly eat kosher again. I'd break every commandment I could, and if you wanted to punish me and take me away from this horrible place, fine. The sooner the better. Over the years, I built myself a cultured facade. My house is filled with objets d'art and thousands of books, but none of it satisfies me. I can just as easily get into a learned discussion of the philosophy of Immanuel Kant as I can discuss the art of Kandinsky. but like Haman has a Steppenwolf, who needed all the bourgeois comforts in spite of being intellectually opposed to them, I was longing for the Jewish warmth I forswore. I continued to deny my natural inclinations. I trampled on my needs. My anger at the Almighty could not be so easily appeased. Occasionally I passed by a shul and stopped for a few seconds or even a few minutes in front of it. Yet every time I resisted the urge to step in and walked on. Then this past Friday afternoon, a few minutes before Shabbos, I somehow came across this page. I suddenly remember the song Oy from Pripyatchik. For my youth, for my childhood, I could not fight it anymore. I went to a nearby shul on Friday Eve and again on Shabbos Day, and Mincha and Ma'ariv. For the first time since the beginning of the war in Poland, 1939, I davened. The tears flowed freely, but I didn't care. The rabbi invited me to his home for the Shabbos meal, a feast for all my senses and more. The day I bought two pairs of tzitzis in Yarmulke, I'm home again. Somehow, the pretty chick in my heart has been relieved. It's obvious that... I tried to contact the guy, but he never answered me. Unfortunately, I would have liked to contact him. But it's interesting how even with the most mundane of intents, we can reach somebody's heart. It's hard, you know, to figure out what best reaches a Jewish heart. But just about everything is capable of reaching somebody's heart, somebody's soul. Now, I am sure that as you have learned with people, whether through partners in Torah or some of the other things, you have had similar stories. Care to share any of them?
Oh, there are so many stories. The question, I don't have anything written up so nicely and beautifully. I'm just looking here at some messages that have been sent to me. You know, your message was sort of accidentally, you weren't trying to inspire. I'm certainly trying to inspire when I make the videos and when I write the blogs. I'll just read a couple things here from a woman that was not observant. She said, I saw your first episode on modesty and hair covering before I got married. You made it acceptable for me to become frum, and I am now happily married with two beautiful children. I cover my hair all the time, something I thought I would never do. Thanks so much for your blog and explaining Orthodox life in everyday language. So that was from a woman that, you know, had not been observant before. And then there was a woman who was raised Hasidic who had had a negative experience. And after seeing the videos, she wrote this to me. I tend to have a hard time hearing the laws and the shoulds and the musts, but I have to say your wit and humor in getting these messages across got me listening. I watched every video on YouTube and immensely enjoyed each one. Looking forward to more of your stuff. Thanks for doing the work you are doing. Jew in the City is definitely onto something big. So I think sort of putting observant Judaism out there in relatable language, in, you know, in funny ways and humorous ways, I think that's really what works about what we're doing at Jew in the City, that it's sort of speaking in the language that people can hear. We certainly have inspiring things as well, but I think, you know, just sort of making it in language that people can relate to.
I'm looking at your blog, and it seems that a couple of days ago, on January 6th, you had a very beautiful post on what if Moshiach stood us up? A Ukrainian Jew seemed to write to you completely despondent, completely forlorn, and he ends with the word, perhaps we expect too much from Moshiach, and knowing that he will disappoint, he just decided it's better to stand us up than disappoint us in the future.
Right.
And you answered him, and you answered him with a lot of compassion, and yet you had a certain force that was sure to get through to whoever that Ukrainian Jew is. And you relate the story of Rabbi Akiva, who, when the other sages cried at the sight of the ruins of the Beis Hamikdash, how he laughed. And as the others thought that he had lost his mind, they asked him why he was laughing. And he said that since the first prophecy about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash became true, it is quite obvious, therefore, that the second prophecy about the rebuilding and the future glory of Eretz Yisrael will also come true. You also write very beautifully.
Thank you.
You also understand those who write to you. It's quite obvious. So let me ask you. You can reach a much higher number of people through the internet, obviously, than you would have reached otherwise by just talking to them in person. But other than the fact that modern technology has helped tremendously, that we can reach worlds we never dreamt of being able to reach, has it also been something of a problem at times, or have you always been able to, you know, to reach your target the way you want it, or did you ever have any unexpected results?
Because of technology, I mean, technology, I think, is something that could be positive or negative, depends on how you use it. I, you know, I think the downside of technology is hearing from people you don't want to hear from. When you put yourself out there, you try to put out a message that you wanted to get to the world, but it opens you up to commenters and to, you know, nasty comments and people that can hide in anonymity and, you know, spew nastiness. So for me, that's probably the most negative thing about the internet and sort of putting yourself out there. You put yourself out there in a public way, you know, in a video, in a picture, with your words, really putting yourself on the line, and then, you know, people from all over the world have the ability to just tear things down without having to put themselves out in that same equal footing. So I'd say that's one of the negative sides, but look, there's so much good that can be done. That's what fuels me forward. I see that lives are being changed, and I really feel like this is my life's work, so I'm willing to put up with the haters and the naysayers as they come out. But no, I mean, it really, what you should be doing online is controlling what you're saying and, you know, putting it out in a measured way. And thank God, really, all the content that I've put out has been received by and large so positively. And I'm constantly praying that God will give me wisdom and creativity and put the right words in my mouth. And I feel like I've been very blessed in my success in, you know, in the content that I've put out. So no negative stories in terms of that sort of thing.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about your video. Mm-hmm. You chose about 10 people who have succeeded in their chosen profession, even though they are orthodox, and even though some of them follow professions that one would have thought an orthodox Jew would never have much of a chance. Tell us a bit about some of the people. In spite, or maybe because they are religious Jews, have succeeded tremendously.
So, you know, Senator Joe Lieberman felt, he was someone that verbalized that he felt like his faith and his Jewish observance had really improved his career, in that it made non-Jewish people respect him, and it gave him sort of the strength and the ability to believe that his big dreams could become a reality. Honestly, he verbalized that, but I think really that message is really for all the people that were in the video. Living with the trust in a plan and in a God just enables a person, I think, to manage life's bumps a lot more easily than when you think life is haphazard and doesn't have any meaning. And I think really all of the people that are in the video sort of see their public role somehow connecting to something bigger, more than just themselves. Alex Clare did an interview with MSN where he spoke about how he feels like Shabbos has only improved his career because he needs that rest and recharge. And any, you know, music gig that was on Shabbos wasn't meant to be. And I think really all of them. Yeah, I spoke to Tamir Goodman after we filmed him, and he said that although he wasn't able to take a scholarship at the University of Maryland, where he was given a full ride at the top school because they wanted him to play on Shabbos, He says they won the championship that year, and you get a championship ring for the year that you do the championship. But he said the ring of Shabbos lasts forever. The championship ring just lasts for 1 year. So really all the people that I was privileged to meet and to get into this video, I think they really all see the observant lifestyle as something that enhances their God-given talents. And it's really just a matter, are the people in their industries willing to work around their schedules and around their observances? And for the most part, like we had Jamie Geller, for instance, speaking about HBO and how HBO was willing to make every accommodation for her in terms of kosher, in terms of Shabbos. So I think really all of them see their observance as how they reach their success.
Years ago, at the annual dinner of the Agudas Yisrael, I remember Senator Lieberman spoke about how he got started as a senator. And he said that after being attorney general in Connecticut, he decided to run. And the primaries were taking a little longer than expected, to the point where it stretched onto Friday night. And that was a night when they were going to finally have the nomination, but it was Shabbat. He could not be there. And he figured, well, I might as well forget it, get used to the idea that my not being there is going to hurt me, that I will not be chosen as a candidate. But it's Shabbat, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in mind, that will be. He says he was very pleasantly surprised that he was chosen specifically because he put his religious ideas above his own political career.
Mm. Like, people respect conviction at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear some story. You said you had quite a few stories. Let's hear something.
A story? What story do you want to hear? Well, I can tell you a story. Maybe we'll just start close to home, about my father.
Uh-huh.
It was, he was probably one of the more difficult family members to budge, to get started in terms of his Jewish growth, just in terms of giving things a try. He's a doctor and very scientific, and he thought he knew what he knew about life and science and God or not God. I was studying in seminary my sophomore year of college. I took a year off, and my family came to visit for Sukkot. And my sisters, there's three of us, we took my mother to the women's side at the Kotel on Friday night, and we were praying, and my father was left all alone because he didn't have any sons and no one could teach him how to pray. So he was just sort of left alone on the men's side, watching all of these super religious men shuckling and praying and swaying, and he sort of in a moment looked up to the heavens and he said, I want to understand. God, I want to understand why these people would do all these things they're doing. I want to understand. And that night was the beginning for him. We were set up for a family for Shabbos that night in the Old City. The husband was a tour guide and an archaeologist. And all these questions that my father had about history and archaeology and questions in the Torah, he was able to answer. And then the next day, we were set up by a family that lived in Rehavia, diamond dealers, and they had a beautiful home and had a beautiful spread. And the misconception that my father had that Orthodox Jews are living in squalor and can't have a nice life, that was dissolved that day. And then the next day, we were set up with a family that had a special needs child, and the amount of chesed and kindness that they were doing, my father was just blown away. And I believe that, just like it says in Tehillim and Psalms, that Hashem is close to anyone that calls out to him sincerely. I believe that that happened in that moment for my father, that sort of when he was ready to explore and to understand, and when he wanted Hashem to help him, he got his answer. So that's always been sort of an inspirational story to me, in terms of, you know, the power of returning and what Hashem will give to us when we try to return to Him.
Okay, now let me ask you one question.
Mm-hmm.
Well said, by the way. Let me ask you one question.
Mm-hmm.
Most people believe that in Orthodoxy, women are repressed, that women are sort of second or third class citizens. You came from a non-religious background, or at least a non-Orthodox background. Mm-hmm. You have a Bachelor of Arts in philosophy. Your father is a doctor. Obviously, you came from a very worldly household.
Right.
Do you feel in any way repressed because you're an Orthodox woman?
No, not at all. The thing is, I think what people need to understand is that within traditional Judaism, men's and women's roles are different. And you can understand differences in two ways. You can understand that different means not equal. You can understand that different means equal but different. Some people, I think, unfortunately, might come to observance because they're trying to escape from something or leave some sort of bad life behind. Like I said earlier, thank God I had such a wonderful life. I had every opportunity. If I had come in and I'd seen women being mistreated or, you know, I will tell you this, in my 15-plus years in the Orthodox world, maybe on a couple different occasions, I've seen a man not treat his wife well, but that was always the aberration. And in my mind, this was just some jerky guy, and this was not Torah. This was a guy not living up to Torah. But by and large, almost all the families that I've seen and have been around, I see a respect and cherishing. And that's sort of the first point that I like women to understand when I explain this to them. We wouldn't have chosen this if we didn't feel elevated and honored. And certainly you could say maybe someone got stuck in that lifestyle, but for the women that return to Orthodoxy, it's because we're seeing something that we're missing in the secular world.
Now, talking about, quote-unquote, missing something in the secular world, in your bio, it says that you are the spiritual mentor to actress Maim Bialik. Now, obviously, here is an actress who started out at a very young age, somebody who became well-known to most of the television audience throughout the country and in Europe, and yet, inexplicably in the eyes of some, she chose to learn more about Judaism. Care to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, the Maim Bialik story is another cool story if we want inspirational stories. The way that Maim and I got together, for me, is an Emunah point. If I ever have a point where my faith is more shaky and I'm doubting, I have to come back to the story and I'm reminded that there must be a God in the universe. It was in 2002 that I randomly thought of her one night. I had watched her on television like all the other girls in my generation. I had a blossom hat. I had a crush on her boyfriend on the television show. And then I stopped thinking about her for about a decade. And I thought of her randomly. I Googled her. I saw that she had moved from Reform to Conservative, that she was majoring in Jewish studies. And I was at Partners in Torah at the time working. And I decided that I'm going to cold call her and invite her to join, which was a completely crazy idea, but I kind of like to do crazy things. So I tried to get a hold of her. And after a while of trying to get her contact info, it occurred to me that obviously her contact info is not listed online because she's a celebrity and they don't do things like that.
Right.
So I gave up on the idea and sort of thought how foolish I had been and moved on with my life. And then 4 years later, she came to Partners in Torah on her own, and we got matched. So when we started learning, I was freaking out that she had found me and that I would be learning with this famous actress. And my husband told me, don't say anything. You can't tell her that you know who she is until she brings it up. Maybe she doesn't want to talk about it. So I got through two whole sessions without mentioning it. And then I sort of casually emailed her that, by the way, I know who you are. We can talk about it if you'd like to. But one of the first things that I did say to her when we were able to talk about it was that God made you famous for a reason, and you have to figure out why. And everything that we're given, all the challenges, all of the honors, all the privileges, it's somehow connected to our service of God. And I didn't realize at the time, but this question really troubled her, and it really got her thinking, and it was something that she kind of couldn't give up easily. And I think not only has her return, you know, been part of her own spiritual journey, I think that doing it in such a public way and speaking about Jewish observance in such a public way and helping out you in the city, frankly. I think that's been part of her answer of why she was given this platform and this opportunity, because it's not just about her connecting spiritually. It's about her using that opportunity and that platform to let other Jews know how special their heritage is.
What is she doing currently from a professional standpoint? Is she still acting?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she really had a second coming in terms of her career. She was out of the public eye for about a decade, and then she is on a hit television show again. She's a recurring character, Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. Most people don't ever get to be on a hit television show, and even fewer people get to be on two hit television shows, but lightning has struck twice for Mayim Bialik, so.
Perhaps the reason she was on the first show is so that she can show the world that you can still be a celebrity, you can still be famous, and like you said in the movie, there is almost nothing that an Orthodox Jew cannot do.
Except pork taste testing.
Mm-hmm. And we are just about out of time, which is a pity because I have a million questions to ask. Unfortunately, we'll have to wait for another show at a later date. We would love to have you back on again.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too.
And good night, ladies and gentlemen, and please tune us in next week, next Wednesday, at 10 o'clock again. And don't forget to look at Allison's blog, Jew in the City. Want to give us the URL, please?
Yeah, it's jewinthecity.com.
Okay. Please take a look at jewinthecity.com. Look at the subject matter discussed in that blog, and don't be too shy to add a comment or ask a question. Good night, one and all. And see you again next Wednesday evening. Good night.
Good night.